From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Open lines this hour. Later this hour, a discussion with the widow of the slain Dr. Eugene Maliv, Joanne Maliv, and a very dear friend of him as well, Dr. James Kornberg. Well, and as I reported, we were stunned by the news of the death of Dr. Eugene Maliv, and we have on the line now his wife, Joanne Maliv, and also a lifelong friend and colleague, Dr. James Kornberg, and we're going to talk right now with Joanne Maliv. Joanne, first of all, our condolences. We just really don't know what to say. If there's anything that we can do for you here at the Coast to Coast family, for you and your family, please do not hesitate to let us know, okay?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. You know, Gene's work was something that this audience just enjoyed thoroughly. I know every time he was on Coast to Coast and talked about cold fusion and his efforts to find these alternative energy sources, I mean, everybody, they just perked up. They called him. He was just a very popular favorite person here. And this loss is deeply felt, of course, and obviously through, I think, everyone on this planet. Is there something that you'd like to say first, Joanne, to everyone out here that is listening to you right now?
About his work?
Yeah.
He was very, very dedicated. He worked tirelessly, and I don't mean Monday through Friday. He worked Monday through Sunday. He was always at work. In fact, it was kind of funny. We would sometimes make a date to go out on a Saturday evening, but it would be not at 6 o'clock, as most people go out. It would be at 10. He would work until then.
There are many who will say that because of the kind of work he was involved in, looking for alternative fuel to help this planet, that maybe this murder, this very tragic murder...
Sir, I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now, Joanne?
Yes.
That there will some that will say that because of his work, that this death may have had something to do with that. Can you shed any light on that, or was it just a foiled robbery attempt?
You mean that, are you referring to the rumors of conspiracy?
Yes.
Well, of course, I have spoken with the detectives who are working on this case, and they're working very, very diligently to solve this, of course. And at this time, they've told me that there is no evidence of a conspiracy. I can't say any more, really, because I don't want to do anything that will make it more difficult to solve this case.
And no, I understand.
I know I can say that, but I shouldn't say any more, really.
Well, I understand. Joanne, I'm not going to keep you. I'm going to chat with James Kornberg in just a moment. But again, our deepest condolences to you and your family. And I just wanted you to know that Gene was loved by everybody here, and we will miss him.
Yes, well, thank you very, very much, and it was nice to be on your show.
Okay, Joanne, you take care. That's Joanne Maliv, of course, the widow of Dr. Eugene Maliv. Dr. James Kornberg, of course, for 38 years, was a dear friend and colleague of Gene Maliv. He attended college along with Dr. Maliv, earning a B.S. and an M.S. degree in aeronautics and astronautics at MIT, later earned a doctorate in environmental health sciences at Harvard in 1974. Eugene pursued other interests while James earned his degree from Dartmouth Medical School and returned to Harvard for his residency. Currently, he performs comprehensive assessments of complex environmental, medical, and engineering problems, especially involving forensic and toxicological assessments of illness and death in exposed populations. We'll talk with him for the rest of this hour. James, thank you for joining us here.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Indeed. Very gracious of Joanne, by the way, to spend some time with us. I can't imagine what it's like for her and her family, having not gone through any kind of death, be it tragic or otherwise. I just can't understand how bad it could be.
Well, that really is an understatement. Gene was, you know, as I said, regardless of what happened, he was always working. I mean, he in this particular case, you know, he went back to his childhood home to try to, you know, improve the situation there, and was you know, working even when this happened. So it was a kind of thing that I just never in my lifetime ever worked with anyone who was so dedicated and so tirelessly dedicated to his family and his work.
I would like you to get some information out to the Coast to Coast listeners now, because there are many people who would like to help Gene's work and his family, if possible. And you have some information for us?
Well, that's very kind of you. We're setting up a memorial fund to honor Gene's memory and to help his family. And this will be set up next week. The title of the fund is called the Eugene F like Frank, Malove, and it's Mallove Memorial Family Fund. And it will be handled through the Sovereign Bank, Sovereign, Sovereign Bank, at 73 West Street, like the direction west, W-E-S-T, in Concord, New Hampshire, and the zip code is 03301. And the proceeds that are obtained there will go directly, without any other interference, you know, to the benefit of Gene's family.
I'll make sure that Sean, who's one of our webmasters along with Lex, posts it on the coasttocoastam.com website, and that we keep it there so people can get that address.
Well, thank you.
James, when he was on with me in February, and we're going to be running that program in a few minutes, cold fusion, of course, was the major thrust of what we talked about. How did Gene get involved in this field? I mean, he had a passion with it.
This is a great story. I'll try to keep it short and sweet, although that's going to be difficult. Gene had pursued a course of great, you know, higher education, which we're both of us are very proud of. He had worked in the traditional sense in the aerospace industry for a while. He had worked at the Voice of America as one of their chief editors and broadcasters, by the way. I don't know if you're aware of that, but Gene was actually one of the science writers for VOA.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the pleasure of actually spending some time on a show with him talking about the carcinogenic properties of some Russian spy dust. I remember it was a wonderful topic, and he uplinked me from Denver some years ago for that purpose. But Gene then went from VOA to MIT, where he, having been an alumnus of MIT and having by that time really earned a reputation for excellence in science writing with articles at the Washington Post, the New York Times, and all the major papers that you can think of, had earned a position at the MIT Information Office as the chief science writer, which gave him access to Nobel laureates, to you know, other outside sources outside of MIT. He, of course, when someone like that would call, or anyone with that sort of reputation, he was able to obtain audiences with some of the greatest thinkers of our time. And when the Pons and Fleischmann events occurred in the late 80s, Gene, of course, began his investigation of this phenomenon, because I'm sure many of you remember the splash that that made. And in the process of investigating this, he decided, unlike some of the others who had investigated, that there perhaps was some merit to the claims that were made, although there were obvious difficulties in reproducing the experimental results. So the answer to your question is that Gene became interested in cold fusion when, like everyone else, it had been reported. Although I know he had a passing interest in new energy development prior to that time, but the passion, I think, that was ignited occurred after, on the heels of the Pons and Fleischmann announcements and his investigation of that. So,
how, cl-
go ahead.
How close did he think we were getting to this, to cold fusion?
Well, I think Gene felt and thought that after, I would say, a year or two, and certainly by the time he wrote, as you know, he wrote his book Fire from Ice, mm-hmm. which was nominated for Pulitzer Prize. He wrote the book because he thought that he had to outline the progress that had been made and to put together an unbiased delineation of the results of Pons and Fleischmann. He knew that we were very close, not only close, we'd achieved some tangible results of over-unity production, but he knew that the reproducibility of these was very, very difficult, if not, unwieldy or impossible in certain experimental settings. So how close we are, it depends on what you mean at what level. I think Gene knew that we had arrived, that we weren't close, that we had actually arrived, but certainly there had not been the universal reproducibility that I think people had hoped for and had expected.
Obviously, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time a week ago when this tragic murder occurred. Without trying to hinder the investigation, as Joanne just mentioned, is there anything that you can tell us, James, that might shed a little bit more light on just what happened?
As far as we can piece together, this was a terrible, horrible crime in which, as you said, Gene was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And beyond that, beyond what I said earlier about Gene's having gone to his family home to check things out, as he had done periodically, there's really nothing more to report. These things go through everybody's mind, but the reality is that the police have been very clear in emphasizing, and I've had the pleasure and the privilege of talking to some of the detectives because I work in the forensics area quite extensively, that they're doing everything they can. They're doing a good job. I'm satisfied that there is a comprehensive effort underway. And the reality is there's just no reason to believe that it simply was his being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that a crime was committed, and my dearest lifelong friend was killed.
My God, it's just unbelievable to imagine. It really is.
It's utterly catastrophic. I mean, it is a highly, unfortunately in our country today, not an incredibly improbable event, but it certainly is improbable, but it becomes 100% probability when it actually happens.
Well, it just it strikes home when you realize that it was just a few months ago we were talking to him and he was so full of life, so full of enthusiasm about his work and what he was doing, and then you have something like this happen so quickly, and it's almost like poor Pat Tillman, who got killed in Iraq, in Afghanistan.
George, I'll tell you, I went back to Gene's house, and I, and I just today, for example, we met at his office, and I went and I sat. The door was closed, and I went and sat in his chair. He has a very large office. He's got, of course, books and bookshelves from the floor to the ceiling, and I just sat there. And turned around, and there was a jar of partially open peanuts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There
yeah.
was a bottle of vitamin C, sitting there on top of a Scientific American magazine. A pencil there, that had been left. It's like I just was waiting for him to come back. It's I've never been through anything like this before, and where things are so sudden, and when we went and had the privilege of going and walking through his library at home, it's just like every library he ever had in all the places he lived. I mean, I recognized that we're so similar in our thinking and our training and whatnot that I could remember. I recognized the books. I was able to take his son downstairs into his basement where he had just shelf after shelf of books, and went right to the shelf and reached out for a copy of one of our advanced calculus textbooks at MIT, and it was there. It was in perfect mint condition, as if And, you know, I could reach to the shelf and grab it, and, you just feel it when you pick the book up. And I had the opportunity to talk to Ethan about our interactions. And I found another book, interestingly, that I had sent to him just 9 years ago that I had an inscription in and found it on the shelf. It's very, very bizarre. It's unbelievable.
His magazine, which I enjoyed thoroughly, Infinite Energy, what becomes of it?
We're hoping that the magazine will continue. And the one of the reasons we met today was to meet with the New Energy Foundation people and to try to come up with a plan, you know, that would allow us to see this continue. One of the gentlemen that we had met with is William or Bill Zeuber, Z-E-B-U-H-R, who is the current chairman of the New Energy Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And this organization will have the responsibility to continue the publication of the magazine. And we met with Christy, you know, Gene's very, very dear office manager who helped out. Has just been an enormously benefit to everyone. So we expect that the magazine will continue, and we just have to try to put Humpty Dumpty back together again, but it's certainly not going to be very easy.
No, not at all. James, I want to thank you, and I know this was very important to you tonight and to the family to at least say something about this during this moment. Probably will be strange for you as well to sit back and listen to Gene's final interview on this program. And as he always does and did, he did a great job with that show.
Well, I'd like to say one thing, that he certainly respected your show and he enjoyed speaking with you, and I really did speak to him about it. And he just had the gift, I think, to spread the word about this, and I think it's going to be very difficult to replace that, if not impossible.
Absolutely. Stay with us, James. Anytime you want, just give us a call, and anything we can do to help you and the family, just let us know, would you please?
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. That's Dr. James Kornberg, a very dear colleague, friend of Gene Maloff. Jeez. In a moment, our special tribute to Eugene Maloff. We're going to replay an interview, and of course it is available for you for free to download. Special thanks, by the way, to all of the Coast to Coast listeners, including the Streamlink members, you fantastic Forum Pirates, all of you wonderful people, for the support that you have offered via emails and fast blasts and on your own internet sites to the family of Eugene Maloff. To our friend Richard C. Hoagland, who has posted some information on his enterprisemission.com website, where he just asks that you continue to support Gene's foundations and magazine. Thank you to you, Richard. As I am going to do, I'm going to sit back and enjoy this interview with Eugene Maloff. I'll see you next week.